Spring is coming, slowly, here in New England, and we're excited about the whole idea of change and new beginnings and birds and grass and stuff like that. What does that have to do with hashtag amwriting? Well, maybe it's time for a new beginning for you as a book coach. Just imagine enrolling in the classes, meeting a cohort, learning all the ways coaches are editorial and emotional support for writers, and then starting to line up your first clients. Students working with Author Accelerator's book coaching program say they often begin to book authors before they're even done with the course, and they end up being booked ahead months in advance. Sound like fun? I absolutely agree. Go to bookcoaches.com to learn more.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay.
Hi, welcome to the hashtag AmWriting podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about all the things, writing all the things, of course. We talk about writing short fiction, long fiction, pitches, queries, proposals. We talk about doing the PR and the marketing and all of the stuff in between. And this week, we have just two of us. We have Serena and myself with a guest, and I am Jess Leahy. I am the author of The Gift of Failure and the forthcoming The Addiction Inoculation, Raising Healthy Kids in a Culture of Dependence, out on April 6th.
And I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the author of 35 romance novels, and my newest one is called Bombshells. You can find me wherever ebooks are sold or at serenabowen.com. And sometimes, once in a while, in years that aren't this year, you can find me at a conference, which is where I met our guest today. And it was so much fun. I would like to introduce Nalini Singh, who is a multi-best-selling author of many things. And the conference where I met Nalini was a romance concert conference in Berlin, where we were greeting German readers who are just about the most enthusiastic people ever. They're wonderful. I can't wait to get back and meet more German readers if we're ever allowed out of the country again. But anyway, the reason I wanted to talk to Nalini Singh today, she has been a very successful romance author for years. And the first time I ever saw her speak was actually in New York City at the Romance Writers of America conference in, I want to say, 2015, where she was a keynote speaker and gave a really fun speech about a train trip across the country. But the reason we invited her specifically today is because she has also made a genre leap to thrillers. And that is something we talk about a lot on the podcast, how to stretch your career and change things. So welcome, Nalini. We have so much to talk about.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like, it feels like so long ago, you know, when we're traveling around and meeting in Berlin and going to New York. So yeah, no, it's good to be here.
And you live in New Zealand, so you've always had to travel pretty far to get to meet like a lot of your readers, and you've always been very generous about that. So what are some of your favorite places to travel and meet readers?
Actually, interestingly, the first place I meet readers, so I went to my very first Romance Writers of America conference when my very first book was just about to come out. So it hadn't come out yet. It was the month before. So
what year was that?
2003.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I went there and, you know, I didn't have any readers at that point because my book wasn't out. So I was a fan. I went around, you know, meeting all my favorite authors. I have pictures with like Nora Roberts and Jane and Krantz and basically everyone I could hunt down at the conference. But then I went to Japan and I was working there for a few years. So my first event was actually in Japan, which is probably unusual for a lot of writers, because at the time I was writing for Harlequin, Silhouette, and my books were translated into Japanese. And
oh, wow.
The Japanese team was so excited that I was actually in the country. So
that's cool.
Yeah, so my very first event, you know, like most authors, the first event is like they do a book signing and maybe like five people turn up. And it's like your mom and your dad and your best friend. But so they had these things at the time that they did where they would do afternoon teas for like the super fans. And so it was quite a few people, and they would have this nice tea set up, and they invited me to a couple of those to be like the guest author speaker. And I did like signings, and it was just so lovely. And the readers were so excited that an author was, you know, in the country, and they were reading my books, and it was just the best way to sort of get into the career in terms of meeting readers. I think it was just the most wonderful experience. But in general, you know, anywhere I can meet my readers, I'm happy to go if I can. And I've been lucky to be able to travel and have these great experiences. I think the year we met in Berlin, I'd also actually been in France just before, so at a French conference. And of course, I've been to the US multiple times, done a couple of book tours over there, and New Zealand and Australia as well. So it's just been, it's been fabulous. And I have to say, this past year has been interesting. I think interesting is the word we can use. But one thing, one good thing that's come out of it is a lot more online events that everyone's been really good about putting together. So I feel like I'm still getting that ability to meet readers, even though it's online now. Yeah, I'm pretty sort of open in terms of where I can meet readers, you know. There's been a few times when I just like to travel. And there's been a few times where I haven't been doing an official event. For example, in Hong Kong, I was passing through a stopover a couple of days, and some Hong Kong readers emailed me and said, oh, we'd love to get our book signed. And I said, sure, come, let's have coffee at the hotel. So we had about 5 or 6 readers come, we had coffee, you know, I signed the books, and it was great. So wherever I have the opportunity, I'm good.
That's lovely. I have always admired your ability to be outgoing and so generous with your time. I mean, your newsletter is something we also talk about on the podcast a lot. And your newsletter is uniquely full of wonderful bonus content. So I know so many authors who are like, I don't know what to write my newsletter about, and I never do them. And then I always point them towards yours because you're so generous with the bonus content. And it's really cool, but I always wonder how you get it done.
So interestingly, how it came about was I was writing a lot of that stuff for myself, just playing with my characters. And it kind of stuck me at some point that, hey, if I was a reader, like if I follow a few authors' newsletters as well, because I'm a fan. And it struck me that if they gave me this kind of material, I would be really happy. So that's how I started sharing, you know, this bonus content. And so it's really what goes in the newsletter. It's really, I try to be, if I was a reader, what would I like to know? Or what would I like to have in a newsletter that came from one of my favorite authors? And so that's how we try and structure it. And the other thing is some of the bonus content is deleted scenes, and that comes from my writing process. So I do a lot of drafts. I am not one of these writers who has a, you know, like the whole thing plotted and then I write each scene and then it's perfect at the end. I do a lot of rewriting. Yeah, I know. Those ones are like, that sounds so good, but I can't do it.
Okay.
So because I do it the way I write, I end up with deleted scenes, like massive chunks of text that I just delete because it doesn't work for the story. But sometimes they're still fun to share with readers, like an outtake from a DVD, like DVD extras. And so, yeah. And the other thing I would say is my newsletter has been running a long time now. And so if you go back all the way to the beginning, it was much shorter. And so it's, I think it would be hard to begin where I am now and just say, I'm going to create a newsletter like this. I think you have to, if you're a writer, you have to give yourself time to build up to that, you know, what's coming out now. It's experience, it's kind of knowing what readers enjoy. And, but yeah, I think if I had to give a tip to writers, I would say put on your reader hat and ask yourself, if this was a newsletter from my favorite author, what would make me happy to open this email from her?
That's actually really, really great advice. But I want to jump back to something you said. You said that you're not the kind of writer who has it all plotted out and you have to end up having to cut. I have to cut a ton. I write nonfiction and I always overwrite and I'm always having to get rid of lots of stuff that's interesting to me, but not necessarily interesting to my reader. So I'm curious, since we did want to talk about genre switching, Do you write the romance versus the thriller? Do you write those differently? Is your process different or is your process the same? Mainly because I always think of thrillers or mysteries or, you know, that kind of tightly plotted, you know, where there have to be clues and you have to introduce certain people at the right time. How do you do that without, you know, having like this massive game plan going into it?
Okay, so it's quite interesting. So I've been asked this question a couple of times. And at first I said, oh yeah, I do write them differently. And then I actually sat down and thought about it. So there's a slight difference in that when I write the mysteries, I have to know if it's a whodunit, you know, whodunit. I have to know who.
That's always nice to know, yeah.
So like for me, that's a critical point to know. And so I was, in previous interviews, I've said, oh, I plan it a bit more because I know who did it so I could put, you know, the clues in. But then I actually started thinking and I realized for my, so my big romance series are two paranormal romance / urban fantasy type series that have a big story arc. And the thing is, for those ones, I also know what the end of the story arc is before I begin writing. So in a way, for both of them, I need to know the answer to the question before I start writing. Because I find if I know that end point, whether it is in a single book for a mystery or in a big story arc for one of my romance series, my brain tends to subconsciously put together the clues to get there. it's like it's really difficult to sort of explain, but that's how it feels like once I know that end point, the whole time I'm working, I'm thinking about where I'm going and how I'm going to pull us back onto the right path to get to that end point. So in that sense, they are quite similar, I've come to realize. But so I guess the only thing I do differently is that in a mystery, they're all standalones that I'm writing, my thriller suspense. That I don't quite know what to call them because some people call them thrillers, some people call them suspense. And I'm just like, I'll just as long as you read my books, I don't care. It's more like within a single book, I have to do that structure. I have to know the ending. And I usually, for a mystery as well, the one thing I do very differently is I need to know all the players in the mystery. So I actually usually sit down and figure out who the people are that are going to be critical in the book. And I also usually, so both A Madness of Sunshine and Quiet in the Bones have kind of been closed communities that I've set the books in. And so I've sketched out little maps of, in one case, it's a town. It's a little town in the middle of nowhere. And the other one is, a cul-de-sac.
I was going to say, as a cul-de-sac, it really is a very closed-off environment.
So I sketched that out because I've always liked to make specific references when I write. I don't want to say he crossed the road. I want to say he turned to the left and the bakery was there. And, you know, like I feel like it really emphasizes the environment if there are those specific details and makes it richer. So, those two things I definitely do. I do the sketch of the place and I do like a character, just very rough notes.
There's a big difference between authors who really think through their secondary characters and authors. And I find that Serena does this often because she's thinking ahead towards, you know, other people she might want to write in the future. But in a lot of books, you know, you read and you feel like you have a really good sense for the main characters, but the secondary characters just feel like, you know, faces in a crowd, you wouldn't be able to pick them out later. But I really, you also, by the way, faked me out. I thought I had all figured out. And I was like, and I often do this with my husband. I'll get to a certain point and I'll say, if this is who did it, then I'm going to be really mad because I figured it out way too early, but you totally faked me out.
Oh, excellent. That's what I like to hear.
Well, I'm happy to hear you say that you know who's done it at the end, because about a year ago, we were interviewing this really smart author, Peter Swanson. He had this book out called 8 Perfect Murders. It's very high concept. It's so cool. And in our interview of him, he said he didn't know who did it when he started writing about it. I just about stroked out, you know, like, how could you do this to yourself? I couldn't sleep at night for, you know, 6 months or whatever, but sure.
I don't know how you'd write that book without knowing at the beginning. It's just, it's a great, but anyway, I would go crazy.
Well, I could see changing your mind.
Yeah.
But I can't see driving into the darkness, you know, with no destination. So anyway.
Actually, it's funny you said that, driving into the darkness, because I do that a lot with my romance series, because even though I know the end of the story arc, within each book, I don't know what's happening. I just start writing and we'll figure it out as it goes. So
Serena, she's a pantser and you're a plotter, right? Is that
well,
it?
You know, I used to think I really was sure that I was a plotter. I thought I knew. And then I had the experience of writing a book with Sarah Mayberry, who is an Australian television writer, actually, and a great romance author. She's just amazing. And she's a plotter. And I learned the difference pretty much just talking to her. And it was quite eye-opening, but I've been trying for the last 3 years to become more of a plotter, and it's only semi-successful.
Have you always written the way you write, or is this something that's evolved for you over time?
It's my natural tendency, but when I started writing, I was very young. I was developed sort of in a completely isolated environment. I didn't know any other writers. This was pre-internet, like, you know, so I wasn't online on message boards or anything like this, and I didn't have any writing group. So it's literally me by myself, and I actually think that's been a real gift to me in terms of my career and my voice, because by the time I actually joined any writing groups, I already had a very powerful voice and I knew who I was as a writer. But the thing was, by the time I joined, so it was Romance Writers of New Zealand, that was the group I joined, and it's fantastic, such nice people. And so for the first time I was meeting other writers, and I was so excited, and I wasn't published at the time, and I met some writers who were plotters, and I went to their workshops and things, and I thought, this is so much more sensible than the way I've been doing it. You know, this is so much more sensible. I won't end up with 40,000 words that I've on the cutting room floor because I just overwrote. So I plotted out this whole book and I was like, this is brilliant. It's going to be so fast. And I never wrote that book because I was so bored. I was so bored. So I learned a valuable lesson, which is that it doesn't work for my brain. My brain really likes the exploration of writing. And what I've also found out is, you know, obviously every writer has their own pace, but in terms of writers who have a similar pace to mine, it doesn't matter if they plot and I write the way I write, we end up at the same place around the same time. So it's just different ways for different brains to work. And when I give talks and stuff, I always tell younger writers or newer writers, try it, try all the ways and see what works for you. And also be ready for that book that comes out of nowhere and just wants to be written completely different from every other book you've ever written.
Right.
Yeah. So Serena's nodding her head going, yeah.
I love that advice.
And thank goodness for that book, right? Because changing up your strategy once in a while is also fresh. Like it also makes the journey feel like a brand new thing. And that leads me to the question of how did you decide, you know, hey, I have been on every bestseller list for romance, but now I'm going to write a thriller. Like, how did you come to this decision?
And how did your agent feel about it?
That's a good story. So I have this habit of doing things like writing whole books and then sending them to my agent and saying, look what I did.
So I guess that gets around the problem of having to convince them ahead of time and saying, no, just have some faith in me. I'm going to go write this thing. Just do it and then see what happens.
See what happens. So I realized recently that next year, 2022, is going to be my 20th anniversary of the day I sold my first book, right? So that's, you know, I've been in this career for 2 decades at that point. And I love it. I truly, truly love what I do. I love being a writer. And I think part of the reason I love it so much to this day is that it always allowed myself room to play. And all my friends that I hang out with here, they all know my soapbox is make sure you have play projects. Because I think when you're on deadlines, whether they're self-imposed because you're publishing indie books, or the publisher deadlines that you've agreed to, or you're doing both, you know, as a lot of us are. It's good to have something that's got no deadlines attached, no expectations attached, and you're just playing with it when you have free time. So my contemporary rock star series began like that. I just was playing with things and I was like, I just feel like doing this to see if I could. So I did. And that was sort of the same with the mystery. I love mysteries. I am a huge mystery reader. I have, so romance, big romance reader. I also read heavily in science fiction and mysteries. And so I just read a ton and ton. And then there was a whole bunch of things that came together. I traveled through the west coast of New Zealand, South Island, which is astonishingly beautiful. It is one of the most beautiful places I've ever traveled in. And it's also very remote. And so I was on an intercity bus. So this is a bus that goes from city to city. But in this case, you know, it's such a remote region. They were stopping in very small towns to let off people who were either going into the hiking trails or just going home, you know. But for them, it's 2 hours on the bus from the nearest town kind of thing. But it was beautiful and it was really fun. And I had all these images in my head, and one of the most powerful was this girl. She jumped off alone with a backpack at the start of a trailhead. And I saw her disappearing down this trail, and she was all alone, surrounded by native bush, which is very dense. And she just was, she vanished. You know, it was that vanishing point you see, and it was just like, and it just stuck in my head. And I just thought, wow, she's going off alone into the bush, and nobody will know if, you know, anything happens to her kind of thing. And I just started thinking, and then I was also having conversations with a lot of my friends about Nordic noir, you know, like those books set in Iceland and Norway with these, you know, they're kind of dark and grim. And we started joking around how come New Zealand noir just isn't as big? You know, we're like a tiny country nobody knows much about. And we're like, we have all the like landscapes for it. So, and I mean, all these things were just playing together in my head. And I just decided, yeah, I'll give it a go. And actually, funnily enough, at the time, I was having real trouble with my shoulders from typing. So I decided to try and learn to dictate. To try and take some of the weight off my body. And so I thought, oh, what I'll do is, to make it more interesting, I'll try and dictate this mystery I've got in my head. So sort of for a half an hour after work, after I finished my writing for the day, I would spend half an hour trying to learn dictation. And if you haven't done it, you know, it's basically teaching your computer program how to translate your voice, your particular voice, your particular accent into words. So there's a lot of correcting at the start. But it was, so that was how the first draft of A Madness of Sunshine came to be. And I wrote the whole thing because I wanted to know if I could do it, because this was something new. And obviously at the point I am in my career, I could have sold this book to a publisher if I had wanted on spec, you know. Somebody would have said, okay, yeah, give us 3 chapters and a synopsis and we'll, you know, probably could have made a deal, or I could have put up a pre-order for if I wanted to do it indie. I didn't because I didn't want any kind of pressure of, this is a Nalini Singh book. This is what people expect from me. I wanted to write what came out and then think about who is the audience for this book. And I think that was really, it was really good. I actually did it that way. So when the book went out on submission, there was no expectation of what this will be. It was what it was, you know, it went out as a mystery and a thriller. The very first book has a fine thread of romance in it. The second book has no romance in it at all. So, yeah, that's the long journey of how it got there. Yeah.
That's really fun.
That's really cool.
I'd like to think that I could write a thriller someday, but I'm pretty sure I can't learn dictation.
It's definitely an investment, I'll tell you that. If anybody is trying, don't give up, but do what I did and seriously just spend like 20 minutes a day on it. Otherwise, it'll drive you crazy at the start. And even now, I don't dictate a lot, but I do. I have had trained the program enough that I can now take breaks from typing when I need to. So if my hands are getting tired or my wrists are starting to act up, I'm like, okay, dictate, you know, the next few thousand words instead of typing.
We had a writer on the show a while back who has disabilities, and he writes all of his books dictating on his iPhone. And that's how he's got, and he just goes, you know, he allots just shorter periods of time to get that stuff done. But we were talking a lot about adaptive technology, and he said just plain old dictation seems to work for him. So anyway.
But he's nonfiction, right? So he's
that's true.
Quote this, quote that.
Oh, right.
Like, the dialogue will just kill you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to take a really short break for our sponsor, and we'll be right back. Hey, Jess here with what I've been learning this week on thegreatcoursesplus.com. This week, I dove into a course I'd been on my watch list for a little while called The Rise of the Novel, Exploring History's Greatest Early Works by Leo Damrosch, PhD. It's sort of about what the novel is, how it came into our culture, from the Roman novels like the Sacher Khan and the Golden Ass, all the way through like Don Quixote, switch into realistic novels like Robinson Crusoe, satiric novels like Gulliver's Travels, and keeps on going through the evolution of the novel all the way up into Pride and Prejudice and Emma, and you know how I love that, all the way through to actually, which was one of my favorite chapters, 24, An English Masterpiece, Middlemarch. I had never gotten all the way through Middlemarch. I am now determined to do so, and mostly because of this course and because it happens to be my father-in-law's favorite novel. So anyway, if you are interested in learning something new this week, including maybe the evolution of the novel, you can go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/amwriting. And if you use that special URL, you'll get an entire month of access for free. And you can download this to your app on your phone. The Great Courses Plus has an app for your phone, and you can either watch the video or do the audio. I like both. It depends on what I'm reading or listening to. It's some are visual, some are not. But go to thegreatcoursesplus.com and /amwriting and get started learning something new this week. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what we have been reading this week. Serena, would you like to go first? Or am I putting you on the spot and I'm torturing you now?
No, I'm happy to be here in the hot seat. I have just been reading a lovely book called Dark Room by Kate Willoughby. It's a hockey romance novel, but I love it when an author can surprise me with the conflict, because at some point after reading a lot of contemporary romance, you feel like you've read every single conflict. And this one, the heroine has a very unique problem with how she views herself. And it's just very cool. And even that would be, you know, a pretty great book, but the hero is just delightful. And I like the way that she's subverted all of some cliches that you see in sporty romance type things. And I cannot wait to publish Dark Room in April.
Yay. Cool. And how about you, Nalini? What have you been reading?
Yeah, so I am like a super enormous have the merch fan of J.D. Robb, the in-depth books.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, and I last year I got into audiobooks really big. And so my latest read is actually the very first J.D. Robb book. I decided to go all the way back to the beginning and get the audiobook of Naked and Dead. So that's been really fun because I think the books are over, there's over 50 entries in the series at this point, and I've read every single one. But it's just great to be back at the beginning of the journey for this character. So the main character is, you know, Eve Dallas, she's a detective. She's very closed off and doesn't really have this big network of like people that she trusts and who are like family to her. And so that's the very first book. And then, so it's really interesting to go back there knowing who she is, you know, 50 books later, where she has this community around her that is an integral part of her identity. So I think, and also, you know, it's so comforting to go back to a reread that I know, that I love, but in a sense it's new as well because it's audio and, you know, previously I read it in print. So yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm excited to, this is just the start. So I plan to hopefully make my way slowly through the entire backlist. Yeah.
That's always really fun and exciting because you know there's so much ahead of you. And when I discover something new, then I know that the series and that there's lots of things. I get so excited. I feel so wealthy. Like there's so much out there. I actually went back and read something that I had heard a lot about and never actually read because one of my kids was re-listening to it. And I finally listened to Becky Albertalli's Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda. And I knew that there was a Simon something movie and that it was based on, that's all I knew. For some reason, it had never been on my independent reading shelf in my classroom. I don't know why. I loved it. It was such a delight. And the person who read the audiobook was fantastic. So I'm so glad I went back and did a little bit of YA because I've been out of the classroom for a couple of years and I haven't been reading as much YA as I normally do. So it's been really fun to go back. And that's a delightful book. How did you not insist I read that earlier, Serena? How did you not insist?
Oh, I probably did miss, but it is really so well written.
Yeah.
And also, it just brings up a question, who narrates young adult books? Like, this has always been really interesting to me because you need a voice that sounds compellingly young, but of course it's not teenagers reading them. So that's always fascinating to me. When I look at YA, I'm like, who's the narrator?
The narrator on this one is named Michael Crouch, and I don't know much about him, but I'm always on the ear out for narrators for you. And I'm like, oh, this wouldn't fit any of Serena's characters. He sounds like a teenager. He's got that teenage sound to his voice. I'm assuming he's older, but he sounds like a teenager. So yeah,
maybe he's 67 years old, but really talented.
Could very well be. Nalini, oh my goodness, thank you so much. I'm number one, you've completely inspired me. I have a project that I've been working on that's just a fun project, and you've completely inspired me to go work on that a little bit tonight and just play because I think it's going to be really good for me. And I have to say, every single time I've ever written something just because I wanted to enjoy the process, it's always ended up being something that was really successful for me, either as a learning opportunity or as something that sort of struck a nerve with readers. So I like that reminder. Thank you so much for giving me that.
Oh, you're welcome. I think the passion comes through, you know? The passion
Absolutely.
Comes through if you're excited about something. Yeah.
Absolutely. Serena, you good?
I am good. It's been such a pleasure to talk to Nalini again since I can't be in Germany to see her.
Yeah, it's nice to see you. You're like on the computer screen.
All right, everyone. Until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
save. Pause. Stop. Stop. Thank you.